Blog Talk Radio.
Bonjour, mes amis. Comment ça va? Ça va bien. I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight, darlings. This is Sybil Brunson, and I'm here tonight on Come Now, Don't Sulk. This is Blog Talk Radio, and we're on the wonderful Here Be Monsters company, family of entertainment and commentary. The Here Be Monsters people are so lovely to be sponsoring my show. And our special sponsor, of course, every week is DaughtersOfIsis.com. That's Daughters of Isis, the fragrant memories of our ancestors, essential oils, and wonderful toiletry products. Do look them up, DaughtersOfIsis.com. They are wonderful, and that's where mommy's beautiful skin comes from. So many of you run into me on the street, even when I'm in disguise, or as the French say, une disguise, when I've disguised myself as an old, as an elderly janitor. I sometimes disguise myself as a man, and I put on a cardigan sweater and a fedora and some old khaki pants. Well, actually, I look more like Katharine Hepburn. But anyway, I try to disguise myself to ward off autograph hounds and bill collectors and that sort of thing as I'm wandering around the Upper West Side. And you come up to me and you recognize me anyway, and you say, "Mummy, your skin is beautiful," and I say it's because of the wonderful family of products at DaughtersOfIsis.com. Thank you for asking. All right, so it is our second show. I'm so excited. I'd like to thank my producer, too, by the way, Gwendolyn Holden Berry, who is the executive producer at Here Be Monsters. And you're live on Blog Talk Radio. This show is live, can you imagine? But it's only live in one of the 24 time zones in the entire world. We're Eastern Standard Time. Chicago is getting us, but it's 7, and then Denver is 6, and then L.A. is 5 o'clock. They're trying to drive home right now, and they're interminable traffic. They're getting us. Last week, it turned out that we had listeners, courtesy of the Internet, thank goodness, in Pakistan, in various parts of Europe, and also, I believe it was in Australia. Just for those of us who are very sympathetic to the Hawaiians, they're getting none of our broadcasts right now because of the terrible lava situation there. And so we wish them the very best. Hawaii is one of my favorite places in the world, and I've been there a couple of times, and I would give anything to live there. But I do have a phobia about two things in the world, spiders and large bugs, and lying in my four-poster bed and having hot lava suddenly explode through the floor and kill me. I don't know why, but I do have a phobia about hot lava things, which is why I gave up my home in Capri. I want to just mention one other thing. A couple of announcements. Those of you, now some of you are listening on the phone right now. Some of you have smartphones or whatever. Some of you have very stupid phones, but that's another subject for another time. Some of you are listening on your computers or on your laptops, and some of you are actually listening on our private subscription service. Neither having cell phones nor having laptops or computers, you have contracted us here at Come Now, Don't Sulk, and at Here Be Monsters on our private subscription service, which involves two cans and a string. And I'm trying to speak much slower this week because we do have many Maxwell House coffee cans in front of Mummy right now with strings going out my bay window. You've seen my lovely bay window. And these strings are draping out and over West End Avenue and then 105th Street. And, oh, just a second. Bunny, darling. Bunny is my cat. Bunny, don't play with the strings. Bill, you're interfering with that. Oh, that reception, you naughty kitty. No, away you go. Don't ever tease the strings, darling. No, Mummy can't have her nice listeners if you're going to play with the strings. Go play with the ball of yarn somewhere else. And don't leave it on the staircase. Mummy fell down last week. It was very bad. So we do have, I will be speaking slower, and thank you for subscribing to our service, which is only for those of you who are curious about the Maxwell House Coffee Can Stream service. It's $11.99 a month. So that's nice. Some of you asked if I was writing for a newspaper this summer. Yes, I am. Fire Island News. I'm writing for the Fire Island News, which it distributes all over Fire Island, all 17 towns, and then all over the South Shore of Long Island. And I just got a note, they're not on just the South Shore, they're all over Long Island. So that means Patchogue and Mamaroneck or whatever those towns are, I don't know. Anyway, they're very sweet towns, and I'm very glad to be in them. Bayshore, Islip, Great River, Oakdale, Sayville, lovely towns. All right, by the way, on Facebook, when Mummy posts notices of either this show or other things, when you share them, your name goes on a slip of paper and is going into a hopper, and we are drawing a Sybil Brunson prize at the end of this month for the person, well, not for the person who's done the most. We draw a random drawing every month. We will draw names out of the share bucket, we call it. And the more times you share, the more names, the more times your name goes into the bucket, and the greater your chances. Also, this Friday, May 18th, weather permitting, Mummy will begin her Smarty Pants Trivia Challenge at Cherry's by the Bay, which is right in Cherry Grove. So do join me. That'll be at happy hour. Last week, and oh, yes, one other thing. I am taking phone calls, and the number is posted right there on the link. But if you don't want to get call in, and many, many calls were bottled up last week, our wonderful switchboard operators, we're trying to get them all, but the switchboard got completely discombobulated. So if you want to contact Mommy, Mummy, during this show, just type in on your Facebook page on the private messages to Mummy. Go to the Sybil Brunson page and then type, that's the one, yes, you know which one it is. Go to the private message and private message me with your questions or comments, although I would love to chat with you. A couple of things. Oh, someone asked me, what is my cure for hiccups? Mummy has a famous cure for hiccups, famous among politicians and actors and actresses, performers, tightrope walkers, trapeze artists, where hiccups are really so inconvenient. I mean, hiccups at 80 feet in the air is not a good choice. If you have hiccups and you need to get rid of them, holding your breath, drinking a glass of water, plugging your nose, plugging your ears, standing on your head, scaring someone, no. Try this. Get a packet or two of sugar, or if you're home, just a big teaspoon of sugar. But if you're at a restaurant or in a public place, get a packet of sugar. Open it up. Pour it under your tongue. Do not swallow it. Hold it there, sugar, normal white sugar, hold it there and let it disappear. It short circuits the short circuit that the hiccup is. It's the most amazing cure. It is absolutely true. It is not one of those wives' tales. It is a sure cure for hiccups under the most dire circumstances. Again, trapeze artists, politicians, and actors in Broadway musicals, they can't afford to have hiccups. So try it the next time you have hiccups. Get a packet or two of white sugar, or at home, just put a big spoonful of sugar under your tongue, hold it there, and just let it dissolve slowly. You'll notice that it absolutely works. The hiccups will vanish. If you happen to be a diabetic, I'm sorry. I don't know what to say. All right, moving along. What else do we have? Oh, news items. Oh, Margot Kidder died. Isn't that sad? She was such a sweet person. She fell on, you know, when we have celebrities die, when they're A celebrities and they're A-level celebrities, it's always, you know, heartbreaking. When they're B movie actresses, and that's not to criticize her, but I mean, she was famous for, you know, playing Lois Lane in four Superman films, and she did a couple of different things, The Great Waldo Pepper and The Amityville Horror. you know, what is sad about this is that she was a lovely character actress, a character lead, as we call them. And she fell on very hard times, which many actors do. She was a big star in the 70s and sort of in the 80s with Christopher Reeve. And it's interesting how her work dried up. She was in a serious car accident. And eventually she fell through the cracks, as many people do, not only celebrities, but know, this is a lesson for all of us. The nice plumber who suddenly breaks his leg and doesn't have health insurance and slips through the cracks. Margot Kidder slipped through the cracks. She became homeless. At one point, she was bankrupt. She suffered a mental health breakdown. You know, she disappeared for 4 days and was finally discovered completely homeless. She was later diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and no one hired her for any acting whatsoever. She did, ironically, later, as she began to pull it all together again, appeared in Smallville, which was a Superman television show, and was on The L Word, and also did a production of The Vagina Monologues. And she also became a political activist. She campaigned for Bernie Sanders. And she finally, she was a Canadian, by the way, and she became an American citizen in 2005. Perhaps that's what gave her all that bad luck. Maybe she should have remained a Canadian. I find Canadians to be much more civilized by the, than Americans, but that's another subject for another time. Interestingly, she was married to the actor John Hurd. We all remember John Hurd, wonderful actor, for only 6 days in 1979. And ironically, he's passed as well. He died fairly young. Christopher Reeve, of course, is gone. Many people used to confuse Margot Kidder with two other actresses from that same period who were kind of raspy-voiced and almost pretty, but not quite, kind of the girl next door, but not quite. The other two were Brooke Adams. We all remember Brooke Adams. She was in The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And Karen Allen, of course, from the Indiana Jones franchises. And she was kind of like that, too, wasn't she? Raspy voice, kind of squawky and goofy and funny and touching and poignant. And then, of course, there was all the jumble of those actresses. We had Brooke Adams, Karen Allen, and then we had Nancy Allen and Debbie Allen, and then celebrities Woody Allen and Woody Harrelson and Woody Strode, Woody Woodpecker. Well, anyway, you know what I'm talking about. We try to pin down actors and actresses, and we get off on those tangents. So anyway, I'm wishing our wonderful Margot Kidder a safe journey, and God bless her on her journey. And she did provide entertainment for us in the film industry. So God bless her. What else? Do we have any phone calls? None yet. Perhaps the switchboard is broken down and I have no private messages. Please private message you, private message me if you would like to. I mentioned Dagmar, my twin sister, last week, and my daughters, Clinique, L'Oreal, Jeanneté. By the way, Clinique, L'Oreal, Jeanneté, all wish you, my listeners at home, a happy, happy Monday evening. They're very thrilled to be a part of the show. Dagmar has not contacted me at all, but she was incensed that I brought up my work at the Horn and Hardart, the Automat, where I had to work, as you know. I had some embarrassing scandals involving the communist witch trials of the late 40s and early 50s in Hollywood, and I was up in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee and was blacklisted along with John Garfield and all sorts of different people. I ran into a lot of trouble, and I had to leave Hollywood. It was terrible, and I fled to New York, where the liberal intellectuals of Broadway and then theater and the Ivy League here were much more forgiving and much more open-minded to liberal thinking. And I was in a few plays. I was in the sequel to The Iceman Cometh, The Ice Cream Lady Cometh, and that was very exciting. It was a musical that ran for 3 days, Danny Kaye and Faith Domergue and myself, and it ran for 3 days at the Music Box Theater and closed. And then I fell on very bad times and had to finally get a job as one of the pie and cake ladies in the Horn and Hardart Automat in Midtown. I was recognized by one of my fellow pie and cake ladies, and they banished me to the another division of the automat. Remember, the automat is where all those glass windows were, and you put in your quarters and whatever, and then the door would open, and you would get the food out on a plate, and then you'd go and sit in the cafeteria. It was a wonderfully Art Deco cafeteria, beautiful. I was banished from Pies and Cakes, partly because I was recognized as a communist sympathizer, and partly because I was guilty of sampling some of the pies and cakes. I would often be discovered with frosting on my nose and finger marks in the layer cakes, especially. And I put on 12 pounds in 3 weeks. So I was banished to another division, which was clear soups and broths. They felt that I would do much less damage there with clear soups and broths. And indeed, I did. I was going to go to chowders and stews, but they knew how I felt about shepherd's pie and things like that. So they said, no, clear broths and that sort of thing, and she won't do anything. It was clear soups and broths, and there was something else that we got. Oh, aspic. I was allowed to serve aspic. And, of course, who likes aspic? Oh, my God, fish-flavored Jell-O. No, it just isn't done. It just isn't done. I've never liked aspic. So that was an adventure that I had, and that will be in my book, Plays with Your Food, or Scraps. That is a recipe and a memoir book that will be coming out very soon. The number to call, for those of you that are asking, is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. And Jan is on. Jan and Richard Glazer, we loved your segment last week about New York City movies. Would you do the same for the great Hollywood musicals? Oh, my goodness. Boy, is that a topic. That's like an 8-part topic for, PBS. I will address that very briefly, because my friends always like me to talk about movies, and we always get into big discussions about movies. Last week I mentioned my favorite New York movies. I'm going to say something, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack, especially from my gay friends. Mummy has a theory, and okay. Musicals in the 1930s and 40s were wonderful. They were original musicals, or they were movie musicals using Gershwin and Cole Porter songs that had been on Broadway and reworked into a new plot or whatever. So you had all of these different Harry Warren songs, all these songs that might have been taken from Broadway plays and put into reconfigured Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers musicals, et cetera, et cetera. Then, starting in the 50s, Hollywood had this come-to-Jesus moment where they knew that they were not going to be able to compete. They had no problem competing with radio in the 30s and 40s. They had no problem because there was no picture. So, of course, radio was home, and that was wonderful, and it was live or whatever. And then you went to the movie houses, and you could spend all day there, and the air conditioning, and you could eat, and there were ushers and usherettes. It was like going to a resort to go to those movie theaters. But then in the 50s, something wonderful and horrifying happened. Radios got pictures. They started out as little 12-inch screens, and most people said it was going to fail, and they were idiots because they didn't invest in television when it began. But the phenomenon of television began to eclipse the film studios, and people like the Warner Brothers and L.B. Mayer were horrified. They just, oh, my God, it was the end of the world. And they realized that as television began to spread and began to be in everyone's home, the only way they could compete with television was to do spectacle. And they did spectacular films of musicals lifted frequently from Broadway. So Rodgers and Hammerstein and Lerner and Lowe, those musicals, Broadway, had went to the giant silver screen because there was no way to do that on a sad little black and white curved screen in someone's living room that was flipping and staticky and everything. There was no way to do it. So the only way they could really carry it off was on the silver screen. And consequently, you had Oklahoma, South Pacific. You started having these breathtaking musicals in the late 40s and early 50s, and that was where they were. Now, that was wonderful. and it was a golden age for Hollywood musicals, wasn't it? I mean, who doesn't like South Pacific, and who doesn't like, you know, Carousel, and who doesn't like, you know, all of them, Oklahoma, wonderful. And they even extended, they even kept going, My Fair Lady, The King and I, right? And they even were able to take the stars from Broadway and move them to Hollywood. Is there anyone more brilliant as the king in The King and I than Yul Brynner? No. Is there anyone really any better at playing Henry Higgins than Rex Harrison? I'm sorry, I don't think so. He's definitive. He is definitive. And that happened over and over again. Now, this is where my gay friends are going to hate my guts. I don't care. Because Mr. Thornton, Wesley Thornton, agrees with me on much of this. We've had many dinners together, and he's my stag from the Cafe Berlin, which is, by the way, where we're broadcasting from. We're broadcasting to you live from the top of the Chrysler Building. The revolving ballroom of the Cafe Berlin is our home studio. Mr. Thornton and I have discussed how musicals starting in the 60s and then definitely in the 70s and 80s went downhill. Annie, oh dear God, the movie version of Annie, I want to gouge my eyes out. Chorus Line, I have literally been held down from taking a screwdriver and driving it into my ears and eyes at the sight of Chorus Line on film. A Little Night Music, one of my favorite musicals of all time. Grotesque, a hideous grotesque. I have actually tried to douse myself with gasoline and set myself on fire. Name any musical from that time, from those 70s and 80s, that were successes on Broadway and have been successfully transmitted or trans-whatevered to film. They're horrible, horrible musicals. It just doesn't seem possible that Hollywood cannot do these musicals properly. The whole thing of Chorus Line was so grotesque. Suddenly they're doing location photography on 42nd Street to let us know that these gypsy dancers are coming from outdoors and they're going into a theater. You don't need that. The musical was brilliant with no scenery whatsoever. The whole thing was genius until the final end with giant revolving mirrors and everything and everyone in gold costumes. It was the most brilliant conception of a musical. Why would you fix it? Why would you fix it? It's just so unforgivable. Annie, all sorts of schmaltz and lovely, and suddenly miscast grotesquely. I can't believe it. So you write in right now, musicals, or call in, 323-784-9639. Name any musical from that period, and I will completely disagree with you. I will disagree with you. Jan, you're listening, I know, and Richard, write in, call in, give me musicals that you think were successful, and I will completely dispel it. And I will even include, and I know this is heresy to the gay community, I know, Cabaret. Sally Bowles, now listen, Sally Bowles is a loser. She's a loser. Jill Hallworth played her brilliantly on Broadway. Okay, she's a loser. She sings sort of. She dances sort of. The story is not about a glitzy, polished Berlin cabaret. It's about a hole in the wall in a city where people are wheeling wheelbarrows of cash to buy a loaf of bread before 8 in the morning when it will double to 10,000 marks. This is an end-of-the-world scenario, is the original I Am a Camera and then the original play. It is not about the daughter of Judy Garland, who sings brilliantly. Let me tell you this. If Sally Bowles sang like Liza Minnelli, gone to Hollywood in 1933, and had a career. Plus, why is Sally Bowles Zoftic? Sally Bowles is starving to death. Everyone in that play is dying of malnutrition. Why would we have plump little Liza Minnelli plumping around and singing like Judy Garland's daughter? It doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. Plus, they fixed the plot. They got rid of the wonderful Jewish grocer. Jack Gilford played that character. Oh, my God, a pineapple for me. And then How the World Can Change. It can change like that. due to one little word, married. One of the most beautiful songs in the show and beautiful moments, and leads to the hideous tragedy of those two characters being separated. Pineapple for me. Meets Guide. All of them. It's like, why would you fix that? Don't fix it. And that's probably the most successful of all those musicals. Yes, Gwen, what do you have?
I have a caller for you from area
Great.
Code 916, and I'm opening the mic right
Great.
Now.
Thank you. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Sybil.
Who's this?
This is Richard.
Richard, how are you?
Oh,
Richard,
I'm doing great. I've got some musicals for you, though.
Wait, it's Richard Glaser.
Yes.
Richard Glaser. Everyone at home, Richard Glaser, one of the most extraordinary concert pianists, unbelievable classical background, but now he does concerts of one. Who are your specialties? Cole Porter and Gershwin? And Richard, who are your idols?
Well, it's Gershwin, of course, at the beginning because of my relationship with Ira as a child, but that went on to Johnny Green and all the great masters, Harold Arlen and Irving Berlin, just the whole lot of them, Johnny Mercer. They were all like a family, you know. All of these great composers, they played for each other, they talked to each other, they were friends, they were jealous of each other, they fought with each other, they made up with each other, and it was like it's just like a family. And maybe that's something you don't have that was kind of being lost in the 70s and 80s. But I'm thinking of what did you now? Here's a film that I really wasn't crazy about. I want to get your input on it. New York, New York.
Well, it's one. Richard, I love that question. New York, New York is one of those things that we put in the file of guilty pleasures. You either love it or you hate it. Many people, like myself, sat in the audience dumbfounded at what we were looking at. I know that we were supposed to enjoy it as sort of a camp 1940s pastiche musical, sort of takeoff on a musical. But one thing that I felt when it came out was like Robert De Niro as a saxophone player. There's nothing easygoing about Robert De Niro. It's like Jack Nicholson. There's nothing gentle about these two actors. And so every time that he spoke crossly or raised his voice at Liza Minnelli, I was afraid that he would either strike her or kill her. So consequently, the musical was a terrifying experience to me because I never was sure if the plot was going to veer off the cliff and he was going to finally beat her to death and leave her in an alleyway.
Just not a likable character.
No, not at all. And played by a brilliant heavy. There's nothing, it's very rare for him to be able to be lovable in a movie. He learned later on, I mean, he dialed himself later to be sort of lovable and cuddly. But in his early career, when he was sexy and hot and should take his shirt off, he was a dangerous creature. And I felt that in the middle of that, New York, New York, it just made no sense. I mean, the best thing about the show was the song, the anthem.
Well, of course,
New York,
the Candor
New York.
And Ebb, yeah.
And
that's absolutely true.
I mean, oh my God! They're just to me, they are, you know, again the platinum standard. They're of
oh,
that.
Absolutely.
If they'd been born 40 years earlier, they would have been back with the Gershwins and Cole Porter.
Oh, no question. I completely agree. What did you think? Here's another musical I want to throw out at you. Hair and Jesus Christ Superstar.
I liked Hair well enough on Broadway, and the film version of it was, for me, dismissible. I'm not offended by the film version of Hair because I don't feel – I knew Jerry Ragney quite well, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Yes, very well. I don't feel that Hair was disserviced by the film because I didn't feel that the play – was epic to me. It wasn't life-changing. And then the other one was, what did you just say? Oh, Jesus Christ Superstar. Yeah. I know this is heresy, literally. I shall probably not get into heaven. The blessed Savior will probably scold me soundly when I perish at the pearly gates. I'm not a big fan of Jesus Christ Superstar.
It's not my favorite. I don't like it so much either. I, you know, but I'm just not a huge Andrew Lloyd Webber fan anyway, so.
I know, and neither am I. I think that there's certain things that happen in certain musicals that are kind of almost wonderful in a kind of faux opera way. But they, I don't know. I've gone to every one of his shows, and they, at some point or another, they leave me. I you know, somewhere in the third quarter of the first act.
Yeah, I know. Well, you can't mention him on the same breath with a Richard Rodgers, or they can't be mentioned on the same breath in that class of composers.
And yet he's a billionaire. I mean, he's a billionaire.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. He's laughing all the way to the bank, for sure.
Yeah, he's a machine. I mean, he's a giant. He's the juggernaut of Broadway. His shows run for 87 years. He has 15 shows, each running since dinosaurs wandered in and out of the theater. I remember the first time I went to Catch, there was a pterodactyl problem. They had to be 2 days out. It was, oh, my God. I was sitting
in the
intersection, and a brontosaurus tried to sit beside me, and there was no room, even though, I mean, it was just impossible. But let me ask you, Richard.
Yes.
Name some musicals that you think from the 70s and 80s.
Well,
there's
really not that many, are there, Sybil?
No. I
mean, they weren't really being produced that much in the 70s and 80s. Really, you know, the golden age had passed, of course. We were getting into Vietnam, post-Vietnam, and the disco. You know, in December of 1977, the course of music and chain.
Are you there? We didn't lose you, did we? When did we lose Richard?
He's still on, but we did lose him. I don't know why. Richard? Hi.
Richard, if you can hear, call back. Call back, because we were getting into some wonderful topics.
Yes, you were on time, please.
All right, Richard, call right back, okay? If you have the number, please call right back. It was wonderful to have him on the phone. Speaking of these, I'm going to just bring them up right now. Grease was okay. I'm going to mention a few. Grease was okay. Annie was excrement. Yentl, puzzling, but still okay. Footloose, yeah. Little Shop of Horrors, one of my favorite moments of all time in the theater. Not on Broadway, off Broadway. The original production on Second Avenue, one of the most magical and memorable evenings I have ever, ever had in the theater, was in that little hole-in-the-wall theater with the original Little Shop of Horrors. What other ones? I'm trying to find them all. The Best Little Whorehouse, dismissible. I'm trying to find musicals that were originally from Broadway, and I'm looking it up, and all I'm getting is Chorus Line, horrible. All I'm getting is ones that were made for the movies, and they didn't make it. You know, Mary Poppins was made for the movies. It wasn't a Broadway play. It was one of those musicals that was reversed. You know, so anyway, is Richard back on the phone? I wonder what happened to Richard.
He actually isn't. He has to call back in, but I'm trying on my end.
That's all right. We'll try and get him back on the phone. By the way, Richard Glaser, amazing. If he comes to your town and he's doing one of his concert series, and where he tells wonderful stories about those composers and those lyricists, and he performs all that great music, run, do not walk. I said, run, do not walk. Sybil says, go to a Richard Glaser concert in your town. He tours the country all the time, and he is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. What else do we have? I have someone messaging me right now on my Facebook page saying, thank you, Mummy, for acknowledging Hawaii. Folks, if you have friends in Hawaii, especially on the Big Island, do contact them. They are going through a situation that is absolutely unknown in living history for them. Hawaii used to have only eruptions up at the top of Mauna Kea, Mauna Loa, Kilauea, and they were just, you know, they were small eruptions. Even in 1959, they weren't devastating. And the lava would come down lava tubes and sometimes creep out into the lowlands and then go into the ocean. And yes, people would lose their houses, but it wasn't lava exploding in the middle of a street and spewing itself all over the place. It is a miracle that no one has been killed or even injured in Hawaii so far. It is literally like a Tommy Lee Jones disaster film. When you look at the news, no one has seen this in Hawaii, where you have a suburb, and suddenly in the middle of Kala'awa, A'aka Street, Hawaiian language is simply beautiful, but they only have 7 consonants and 11 vowels. It's the strangest language. It's completely opposite Polish, which has only 3 vowels and 400 consonants. So it's a complete dead opposite. But whatever those streets are that are in Hawaii, they suddenly will have a rumble of thunder and an explosion, and then you have a car explode. So let's give all our Hawaiian friends all our love, and be sure to touch base with them, see if they need anything. They need our love and support. Yes, Gwen, what do we have?
Mahalo, you're so right. We have Richard back. I have his mic open, so Richard, go ahead and speak.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We had internet problems, and I sincerely apologize for dropping out during
That's
our enjoyable
right.
conversation.
We're glad
but
to
I think
have you back. We're glad
I think
to have
the situation.
Back.
I think the situation in Hawaii that's going on and all the problems is a reaction to these horrible musicals that we're discussing from the 70s and 80s.
Yes, to Ray Walston putting on a coconut brassiere, a mop wig, and a grass skirt with no underpants on underneath.
How about that horrible movie?
To draw
the one with Ray Walston was so horrible, with Dean Martin and Ray Walston, directed by Billy Wilder. Kiss Me Stupid. Kiss Me Stupid.
Do you know that movie?
It was music by it was a posthumous score by the Gershwins. So Ira, Billy Wilder approached Ira and said, "Will you go back to unpublished song file of George's, pick out some of the tunes that you like they did on the Shocking Miss Pilgrim with Betty Grable and Dick Hames in the 40s at 20th Century Fox?" And he went back in 67, and then he set words to these melodies for Kiss Me Stupid. And Ira saw the film, and he said, "I'm not letting the melodies out anymore. That's it. I'm done."
Wow. What an
It was Billy Wilder. Have you ever seen it, Sybil? Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Kiss
have
Me
not.
Stupid. Kiss Me Stupid. It's available on video. You can. It's really bad.
That is incredible. And what I love is that the name itself is almost like dooms it, doesn't it? It's like Kiss Me Stupid.
It's just,
oh,
it's just was not
that.
A good. I don't think Billy Wilder had his heart in it. I think that he kind of lost focus on it. But I wanted to make a point when the internet got so upset over the world situation. I was trying to make when we got disconnected in December of 77, things changed music wise. In history, with the release of a film called Saturday Night Fever.
Right.
And we shifted, the music completely changed to disco. Disco, you know, the golden age and like even like Cabaret in New York, those films were made before Saturday Night Fever. But in 77, everything went disco. Do you remember?
Yes.
Do you remember the influence that movie had on our culture?
Huge change, yes. And it was interesting because disco had been around for a while for those of us that lived in New York, but for Toledo, Ohio, it was definitely
right.
Life-changing. It was Moses parting the water for them.
Yeah, right. And when we saw Travolta dance at the 2020, what's it called, the 2000 Odyssey Club there, wherever, it was really something to see. And
it was
interesting. You know what else is interesting about that movie is his love interest in that movie was, she only did one movie. Her name is, she's the daughter of the guy who wrote Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?
Oh, I'm trying to look it up.
Yip Farber wrote the lyric, but her father was, her name? Gosh, Karen.
Karen Allen. No, I know who you mean. I can't think of it.
But her
right
father,
now,
her
but,
father was a golden age composer.
Yes. Yep. She came from a background. Yep. I wanted to mention a couple of musicals. This is where it's so funny.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of these names, and Richard, I couldn't think of these names because I loathe these films. Okay, I loathe them. And whenever this subject comes up on chat rooms or on Facebook page
yeah.
clubs or things, people again. People either love it or hate it. It's like the people who in New York who voted for Trump, but don't say it at a dinner party. They don't say it. They go back to the chip dip or the crudité, and they say, oh, these carrots are remarkably fresh, aren't they? And they dip them in the sour cream. Okay. These are two movies that I openly have said are living excrement. And I am, many people say, oh, I can't believe you said that. I agree. And then there are other people that say I should be burned at the stake. Are you
okay,
ready?
You got me in suspense. What are they? I'm in suspense.
Hello, Dolly.
Oh, God. It almost killed. Almost broke 20th Century Fox. It destroyed that studio.
Exactly.
Gene Kelly directed that movie, and Roger Edens produced it. But Gene Kelly, when you look at the career of Gene Kelly, what did he do that was so magnificent after he broke up with Stanley Donen?
Exactly. Exactly. That's a good point. And what did they have to pay him to direct that movie, especially with that cast of people? Walter Matthau. Look at each other.
Streisand was too. First of all, she was too young. And Dolly Levy, she was not a Dolly Levy.
Dolly Levy,
I don't think, was Jewish. Is that correct? She's not
she's Irish. Dolly Gallagher.
Exactly.
She married Ephraim Levi.
Exactly. But she was not Jewish, Dolly Levy.
No. And it's pronounced Levi, I believe.
Levi.
She addresses herself as I'm Levi. The bottom line is this. She married. That musical is very interesting. The original Thornton Wilder play is really fascinating.
First
of all, Streisand doing Mae West through the whole thing was so distressing. Secondly, the fact that they had no chemistry. In fact, Streisand had no chemistry with anyone, not even with the waiters in the restaurant. I mean, when she comes down the stairs, they give her a look. It's like, oh, my God. So it's just, that musical is so bad. And what I think is interesting, I love the musical but not the movie. What I think is so interesting also is that people forget that Dolly is a widow, and she's a Shirley Booth, Carol Channing type person. She's an older, attractive woman who is completely lovable, but she is not going around ham boning on stage. A. B. It's interesting also that Horace Van der Gelder is a widower, and that Irene Malloy is a widow as well. There's a lot of people on there who've had dead bodies in their lives. And it's a fascinating thing to think about. It gives the whole thing. Irene Malloy is trying to remarry, and why, and who is she hoping to find? How did she feel about her first spouse? How did Horace Van der Gelder feel? How did Dolly feel? Dolly was obsessed with Ephraim Levi. Interesting story. 1890, whatever. She's an Irish person who married a Jew in New York.
Yes.
That alone
is
fascinating. And Thornton Wilder didn't do any of that stuff by accident. I want to just say one thing, because I'm looking at the clock. Richard, are you ready?
And I want to say the second movie that you're going to say is Mame. Am I correct?
Yes. Mame. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Oy Vesemir. I don't know what Lucille Ball was thinking. I don't know what she was thinking when she took that part.
I don't know what Jerry Herman was thinking. Why would Jerry Herman have taken
I don't know.
Most lovable musicals, despite what Sondheim says, despite what Stephen Sondheim has to say about Jerry Herman and those things. The bottom line is, this is American folklore.
Absolutely.
These are two plays that were turned into iconic musicals.
No question.
And were run into the ground. And Jerry Herman, if not a billionaire, certainly is wealthy enough to have said, no, Gene Kelly, no Streisand, no Walter Matthau, no Lucille Ball, are going to ruin my musicals. I will never live long enough to see them made again.
It would be interesting to hear what he would have to say about that now, wouldn't it?
Yes, and I know Jerry Herman, but I haven't seen him in ages, so I would wonder if I should ask him that. There's one other thing I want to say is that I adore Robert Preston. Adore Robert Preston. I adore what he did in musicals. How much did they pay him to be in that pan of dog poop Mame? How much had they
paid him? Oh, poor Bright. He was so wonderful. He was such a wonderful. I mean, when you see him in 62 in 62 in The Music Man, that was a great, that was a wonderful film.
Victor Victoria. He's priceless in Victor Victoria.
He's priceless. Just a treasure.
Is Is Gwen trying to say something? Gwen, what are you saying to us?
Your lovely conversation. We do have another caller from the New York.
Okay, very good. Wonderful. Well, I so enjoy talking to you, Sybil, and we enjoy the show. We love listening to it, and we just enjoy it so much, and thank you for doing it.
Richard, I hope you'll join me again other times.
So you know that I will.
Promise?
I promise, and you have a wonderful evening. We're going to listen to the rest of the show.
Okay, love you. And everybody, that's so nice of Richard to call because he's calling from the West Coast where it's only 8:30 in the morning. So it's very
all right. Okay.
That's much earlier
okay.
than we usually get.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Gwen, I'm ready.
You have a new caller. And it's New York area code. And caller, your mic is open.
Thank you. Sybil, can you hear me? It's Bethel.
Geffel Tefish. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Geffel Tefish, who is not only a member of the Imperial Court of New York and a giant person in the Imperial Court system of the United States, but also was an empress. What number were you? You were
20.
You were 20, weren't you? Yes.
That's why I'm the 2X.
Of course. And Geffel is the genius. Many of you comment, you know, Geffel's not on Facebook. She's too busy and hoi-polloi for us. But I just want to say that Geffel never gets to see all the compliments that come when I post photographs of my costumes over the years. And for those of you that are wondering where the Marie Antoinette or the Mother Goose costume or Gilda the Gelf Girl, the dreidel dress, oh my gosh, all those costumes, those are Geffel Tefish. They are from her Hefty Highness Hideaway. The famous Hefty Highness Hideaway, where imperial people with weight problems can go and disguise their little cellulite problems under crinoline and corseting and pop riveting.
Steel boning.
Boning, literally whale boning. Guess what are you tonight?
I'm thrilled. I'm listening to your podcast, and I'm absolutely delighted. I did want to make a couple quick comments.
Yes.
Streisand, being as famous as she was thrust into that movie. Walter Matthau was furious. He was beyond furious and couldn't get out of his contract. Carol Channing, the morning she got the phone call that she wasn't getting the role, just lay down in bed for a week and didn't speak to anyone.
I remember
and
hearing
Walter
that, yes.
Matthau was so furious, and he refused to speak to Streisand, and he was mean, and he would not act with her. So when you say there's no chemistry, both of them are magnificent and equally could have done wonderful things, but they didn't because he was so upset. And I have to tell you, they've become good friends many years later. Yes, they became good friends, and they patched it up, and they made up, but the movie was done and over with long after that.
Right.
Another thing, did you know that, you know, sometimes movies are bought for people.
Yes.
Merman wanted to do Gypsy, desperately.
Right.
But Roz Russell's husband, Freddie, bought the movie rights for his wife as a gift.
Right. Yep.
Not that Roz Russell isn't wonderful, but she had no business doing Gypsy. She did a great job. She should have done the straight play, not the musical.
Right. Right.
You know, and that's, I mean, that's just how it is. MAME is pretty much the same thing. You know, Lucy said, I think I want to do that. And they bought it for her. And the people who paid for it said, we're doing this for Lucy.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
Robert Preston was in there and he'd already been signed.
I still think it's fascinating that Jerry Herman seemingly did not have more control over his own wonderful, wonderful projects. But, you know, that's another story for another time.
It's terribly sad, but no, when you sign the rights to something and you allow, contracts are very difficult and very complicated.
Listen,
now, you also mentioned – sorry.
Yes. No, you go.
You also mentioned early in the program about how Andrew Lloyd Webber is such a billionaire and, you know, everybody – I know that Leonard Bernstein used to go sit in the audience and listen to every bar of music and say, yep, that came from Turandot. Yep, that came from Rigoletto. Yep, he stole that from, he borrowed that from, and he would sit there and tell other people in the audience every bar of music that was borrowed.
Yes,
he's a brilliant millionaire, but because they're listening to songs that they already knew and they loved and things that touched their hearts.
You know what's funny about him, and I'm, Geffel, I'm so glad that you brought that up. Andrew Lloyd Webber is what I consider to be, he's a composer, et cetera, whatever, but he's an assembler. And that is very much what Ralph Lauren is. Ralph Lauren isn't so much a designer as an assembler. He assembles fantasies, and he assembles classic looks from fashion and makes the, you know, he makes this kind of 1930s MGM, Fred Astaire, Gary Cooper fantasy up. He does the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. It's like Madonna. Madonna is not a great talent. She's not a brilliant singer or dancer. She is an assembler of images and publicity, and she creates all of this stuff. She's borrowed everything. She borrowed the grunge look.
Sure.
She borrowed the village look. Borrows and assembles.
And
what,
that's why when we see it and we go, oh, my God, it's so heartwarming, you don't realize that you're saying how much you love something from your memory and your past.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, my God, isn't that beautiful? Yes.
Yes, exactly. It's interesting how marketing has replaced, in many cases, inspiration in the late 20th century and early 21st
and
century.
And talent.
Yes, and talent. I'm looking at the clock, and I'm getting a sign that I have to begin my wind-up. Geffel, will you promise to call in again and join me on the show again?
There's Geffel, only one other thing I want to say quickly.
Yes.
Remember your old friend Mildred Pierce, who said there's no shame in being a waitress when you were at the Harn and Hardit, so don't be embarrassed.
By
Mildred said it first.
Geffel and I go back to early cable television days. We were at the Cafe Berlin together, which we performed in for years. And then we were on the Gay Cable Network together. And we did several shows. We did Be My Guest, and we did the Sue Brunchen Show. So I just want to say that it's wonderful to have a friend still around, when we've lost so many friends over the decades. And for us to have grown old together is lovely, because we were children when we first met. We were children working at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, and that ended very badly. But that's a topic for another time.
Tis true.
Anyway,
all right, have
I've
a lovely evening. It was wonderful speaking to you. Good night.
Good night, and Geffel, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I love you.
I love you.
The show, I hope the show was as entertaining to all of you as it was to me tonight. Having Richard call is wonderful. I adore his wife. We didn't go into a lot of details. I missed out on my this week's Week Minded of the Week, which was wonderful. Actually, I'm going to just mention it quickly. It's Steve Wynn, billionaire and former casino owner of the Bellagio. For those of you that don't know, he put his elbow through yet another Picasso. He did it back in 2006, and then he had it restored over 7 years and sold it for $155 million. He just did it last night before it went into the Christie's auction in Hong Kong. It's called Le Marine, the sailor, and it's valued at $70 million. He put his elbow through that. This is why rich people should not be trusted with beautiful objects. We'll talk about that another time. I'll tell you about my runners-up also. I want to remind you all, I'm writing for the Fire Island News. Please pick up your issues on Fire Island and on Long Island. Remember, sharing all of my announcements means that you will be eligible each time you do, greater chances for a Sybil Prize at the end of the month, and I won't reveal what that is, but we have a wonderful Sybil Prize for you. Also, Friday, May 18th, is the Smarty Pants Trivia Challenge at Cherries on the Bay. Jackie Piazza, hello there, Jackie. How are you? Love you. And all the folks over at Cherries. My show, Come Now, Don't Sulk, is produced by Gwendolyn Holdenberry of Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, and our sponsors are DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. I want to say a special shout-out. I want to call out to a couple of people, Shoshana McCollum and Bamboo at the Fire Island News, and Gabriel Stevens Smith, and Sarah, little Sarah, pet her for me and give her a bite. Patrick Hoy, how are you? Lee Gannon, lovely to see you. Joan Griffiths Hahn, lovely. Hi, Harriet. Elaine and Jimmy Rassiopi. Elaine Zena and Jimmy Rassiopi, how are you? Derice, T.B. Darlington, I adore that name, don't you? Sounds like it's something out of a murder mystery. Brendan Fisher, Mary Jane Nilsson. Anne, how are you? You still are in the running for the prize. Mr. Thornton, Geffel was on the line tonight. I hope you heard her. Who else? Oh, We've got Robert and Judy. I feel like Miss What's-Her-Name on Romper Room with the Magic Mirror. I should romper, stumper, bumper, boo. Hello, Tallulah. Hello, Herb. They're all coming in right now. I'd like to say a special hello to my own Monsieur Rishi and to Carl Smith and, of course, my own Mr. Payamo. Mr. Payamo, how are you tonight? It's like what Jimmy Durante used to say, good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are. Oh, I just noticed that we have a couple of minutes left. Do I have any other callers, any messages coming in? No, I guess not. Some people said, Mummy, please recommend movies. Darlings, I am stunned at how many young people do not know the great movies. I can't believe how many 20-year-olds have no idea who Meryl Streep is. Forget Betty Davis. They don't know who Betty Davis is. They don't know who Meryl Streep is. I'd like to recommend a couple of movies, especially if you love New York. Moonstruck, 1987, directed by Norman Jewison. Cher, Nicolas Cage, Danny Aiello, Olympia Dukakis, Vince Gardenia, Julie Bavasso, Louis Gus, Theodore Chaliapin, whose father was the great conductor, John Mahoney, the late John Mahoney, the late Gina De Angelis, one of my favorite actresses of all time, Anita Gillette, who I had lunch with Richard Skipper. Hello, Richard Skipper, by the way, and Anita. You must run, do not walk, to Moonstruck. A Cinderella story, if you want, a wonderful Cinderella story, or an Ugly Duckling story, if you want. Who was the great philosopher who said that there are only 7 great plots in the history of the world, and the Cinderella one is one. The Ugly Duckling one is a similar plot. Moonstruck, done on a budget of nothing, ended up being a blockbuster, an iconic film about love and New York, and it won Oscars left and right. Run, do not walk to that film, Moonstruck. And another one that is a personal favorite of mine, although a lot of people don't think it's in the same caliber as Moonstruck, but I do. Desperately Seeking Susan, 1985, directed by Susan Seidelman. Rosanna Arquette, Madonna before she was famous. Laurie Metcalf, one of my favorite actresses in the world, Laurie Metcalf, who has bloomed and bloomed and bloomed and become a stateswoman actress. Like, she, unbelievable. The unknown Robert Joy, the little-known Aidan Quinn, the almost unknown completely John Turturro in that. That movie is about the East Village and New Jersey, and, again, a Cinderella story. Also, the Odyssey, someone who comes from a familiar place and goes to a strange land and falls in love and finds herself, even through amnesia. It is literally New York, the club scene, frozen in amber. A thousand years from now, people will know what that is like. And by the way, there's the famous Madonna shopping in Love Saves the Day, the wonderful shop on 2nd Avenue at 6th Street. It was that coffee store that sold Barbie dolls and crinolines and Pez containers and everything. That store was the East Village Distilled. And she goes in there shopping, and Rosanna Arquette does. Remember, they go in and they get the jacket that had belonged supposedly to Jimi Hendrix. Brilliant. And the tragedy, and it's ironic, is that that entire block was blown to pieces a few years ago during an explosion, a disaster. And the store, although it had closed, that place that the store was is gone. So when you see that film, you're looking at real estate that's been erased, which is happening all over New York right now. People are erasing the culture of New York, not just old buildings from the 1800s or the early 1900s. They're erasing the culture from 20 years ago. Speaking of which, Love Saves the Day is in Mummy's house. When they closed, I managed to get it, and I was very pleased to have it, and it's one of my collectibles in New York. My New York collectibles, I mean, in my apartment. I also happen to have the kitchen doors of the original Waverly Inn. Can you believe it? From 1920. Those are all stories for another time. Good night. Remember my sponsors. Gwendolyn, thank you so much. Thank you, Here Be Monsters. Tune in if you missed the broadcast tonight. Just click on the link or tell your friends to click on the link, and they will be sent instantly to Blog Talk Radio, to the production company Here Be Monsters, and to Mummy's own come now, don't sulk. The shows are archived right there. You can hear last week's show, and in another few minutes, you will be able to hear this show all over again. Do tell your friends. Do tell them to call in. I adore all of you. I wish you all a bonne nuit. A tout à l'heure, darling. A tout à l'heure. And do be sure to come up to me, even if I'm disguised as a man, and say hello. And I will be very nice. And perhaps you'll buy me a croissant and a cappuccino. Until next week, darling, Mondays, if I don't see you out on the island, I look forward to seeing you here. Gwendolyn, good night, darling. Thank you so much. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful week.